Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tales from a Vet Tech with me, Tabitha Kucera. Today, I am speaking to Ellen Carroza, aka the Cat LVT, all about, you guessed it, cats. Advocating for cats in your practice or shelter, pediatric cat care, and more. So enjoy, everyone. Hi, Ellen. I am so stoked to have you here today. Us cat people need to stick together.
Yay! Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to finally actually speak to you again. It's been such a long time.
I know. We just caught up for an hour or so before the podcast, so we realized we should probably catch up more often, but you guys won't get to hear that fun conversation.
behind the scenes.
Yeah, behind the scenes. Maybe one day, Patreon, future things. But Ellen is an amazing veterinary technician. She's a VTS in feline. She is all the great things. And we met, I think we met years and years ago over cats.
At cat camp.
Cats are like the most popular pet, yet it's still a niche, which is really interesting. And it's good for us, but it's also, it's still interesting to me because I'm like, everybody wants to know more about cats. Why aren't more people trying to understand them behaviorally, medically, which I'm sure you get frustrated sometimes as well, because we're those people that spread all the education. But that's how we met. And of course, we connected. We are both straightforward, lovely people that like to teach people about how to make the world better for themselves and their cats. So I figured we would just chat a little bit about your career path. I know it's a lot because you're amazing. And then kind of go from there.
Sure. Let's do it.
So where did you, I know you mentioned you worked with primates. How did I not know that?
Oh yeah, I know. Cause this was a long time ago. So I've been a technician since 1994.
And, gosh.
I know. And I went to the university, the State University of Delhi, and we have a primate colony there as part of our program. And, you know, of course, during the summer, you have to find like your internships and everything. And I live in a teeny tiny country town in New York where I was growing up. And I'm like going, there's not a lot of vet offices out here. What, like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And my mother is not going to let me take the train down to the city to figure out some things. And at that point in time, my brother was dating a young lady and her mom turned out to be one of the managers for the Laboratory for Experimental Medicines and Surgeries in Primates in Sterling Forest, New York, AKA LEMSIP. So she knew me very well. And she was like, fantastic. You got a summer position. And I absolutely loved it. I thought working with the primates was such a delight because you get to learn all of these different personalities. You get to learn all of these different behavior and mannerisms that they have, how as a technician, you are required to create enrichment, a unique enrichment, not everyday enrichment, unique enrichment, and how to keep them thriving while they are giving back to the medical community for viral research. And we did HIV, SIV, hepatitis, some unknown stuff. And, you know, we bred baboons, which I was part of that program. I had a baboon unit that I absolutely adored. You know, and I did that. And then, you know, when the lab closed and it was sold, you know, I was kind of like in the second phase of my life going, do I go to vet school? And I went to Albany for a semester, hoping that I would, you know, continue on into vet school. And I had some, you know, life changes that happen and decided to move to Washington, D.C. instead and found out that you do not get to transfer your Cornell connection points to Virginia Tech the hard way. And I was like, oh, well, that bird flew the nest right there. Oh, well, not going to vet school. And so I decided on, you know, taking out a newspaper, because that's when we used to look for jobs back then in a newspaper and circling, you know, the little jobs. And I found that the Washington Animal Rescue League was hiring for a technician. And so, yeah, that's when I actually started working in the city. I started out in shelter medicine.
Woo woo.
And I absolutely loved it. And then finally, I went to a small animal general practice for two corporates that will remain silent and decided that corporate medicine on that standpoint was not for me. It was just a little too fast paced and I didn't feel that the cats were actually getting the care and the time that they actually needed with a veterinarian. And then I found out that there was a place called Capital Cat Clinic right up the road from me hiring for an LVT. went and, you know, interviewed there. And I absolutely loved the place. It was this little teeny tiny farmhouse. They had cats wandering all over the place. And I was like, this is it. And I just celebrated 20 years of being with the same practice.
That is amazing.
We've been sold a couple of times as far as like name changes and stuff. And now we're corporate with Rare Breed. And we're now Nova Cat Clinic. We've been like that for now, a little over 5 years. But I've been with them as their sole veterinary technician for 17 years before I finally was like, I can't be a one woman show anymore. Please give me somebody else. And I got a technician that came through us for her internship. And I thought she was just fantastic. And then she was like, I really like you guys. And so we hired her full time. And it's like, she's been like my protege. I tell her every single day, I go, one day I'm going to be gone and you're going to have to learn all this information. So we need to learn it now, just in case if tomorrow I get hit by a bus.
We have to share our information and mentor appropriately. Yes. So I love, you're like, I'm going to take you under my wing, girl. We got this. And also I'm planning for when I leave.
Yes. It's going to happen one day. I mean, after you're doing this for 28 years, one day I'm not going to be here. And I would like to be able to pass on everything that I know that is practical and helpful and everyday useful information to make you a better technician. Even though the books say one thing, you can go to as much, continuing education as you want. It's not the same as the everyday hands-on experiences. When I say 100%, I know it says this, however, I'm going to teach you how to do it this to make it a lot easier on you and your patient.
And what drew you to, because it sounds like you were looking for cat clinics specifically pretty young, as a baby tech. Were you just like, I'm obsessed with cats. I love cats. Obviously, I love all animals, but I really want to work with cats. And where did that come from?
Right. So I always loved cats. I grew up with, country cats all the time. And I kind of always had like a sour spot for dogs. So sorry, dog people. I'm not a huge fan of them. I feel like I'm a cat in some ways that, I prefer everything to be more quiet. I like everything to be thought out and methodical versus having to share every single moment around me. Or if I'm barking and you're like, hey, calm down about that. And the dog's like, oh yeah, she's barking with me. Let's bark even louder. It's one of those situations. Like I can't do it. And then plus having to pick up these giant dogs and putting them on these tables. And meanwhile, I'm 5'2".
Gotcha.
And I'm like, no, I'm not really comfortable having this giant German Shepherd's head next to above my face working on it. And I just didn't feel safe. And I always felt much safer dealing with cats, even if they are quote unquote in practice, the problematic ones. I always felt safer with them because I felt like I could read their body language a lot better. And I knew how to stop and take a break or simply change everything that I was doing to make this creature much more comfortable and earn their trust a little bit better. And I just really liked them. And I was like, man, these are just so cool. And then you see in medicine that they still kind of are like on the back burner.
Yeah.
As far as, care in the clinic, et cetera, despite what everybody says online, I know you're all going to be like, that's not true. At my clinic, we do blah, 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 blah. That's great. It might be your clinic. However, being really heavy with social media. I watch TikTok. I watch Instagram. I watch Facebook. Y'all still mean about cats, and it's one of those things that it's like, we need to make some serious changes. And I wanted to be that technician that made that change. And so this was back in like the late 90s when I was like, nope, I'm done. We need to change our whole outlook as a technician working with these cats. And if I'm not going to succeed in the two places I was in right then and there, I'm going to go to a place that's dedicating themselves to cats that want to do better. And I lucked out because, working with Marcus for like 20 years, we've actually evolved a very good relationship, a working relationship, and a very good friendship on how the clinic was going to run and how cats are going to be handled and handled appropriately. And I think we've actually grown and really evolved into what a true gold standard feline clinic could be.
I have to come visit. I was just thinking that earlier today. I was like, how have I not visited her clinic? I'll just come out and visit you and then happen to see the clinic.
Yeah, well. Absolutely. Absolutely. But we're two-story cat hospitals, gigantic. It's like, I know, slightly shy of 3,000 square feet.
I have to go there. But yeah. I totally agree with you because, again, as I'm a very positive person, but I'm also very real.
Yeah.
And I love dogs as well, but I started with cat behavior first and I work with both. But a big part of that was because in vet med and shelter med, I saw the amount of cats who were being euthanized or relinquished and the suffering from the human standpoint as well. And being like, why? And then I was like, oh, there's no, as a veterinary professional, there's minimum appropriate, well, science-based like resources. So I was like, and like you said, the general public, and this was this was like 10 years ago. And even now the one positive I've seen in the field, I think, is I feel like in shelter med, especially, they are aware that they need help with cats. They are, which is half the battle, right? Like identifying, we need help with this. In vet med, I don't think it's as strong there, but I do feel like many people that I meet, and as I attend conferences and, you know, just like you said, kind of see the world that we realize that we need to do better by cats. And, but those hardcore stereotypes, whoa, girl, like
and they're still there. And it's
they're like, still there so much. And these are vet techs and vets like saying like fractious, which is a word I think language is really important. We should be describing
they're body aggressive language. You know, weapons of mass destruction as far as their teeth and nails go, and like just like the shitty ass attitude that you see on a lot of these vet tech forums. It's like, who are you? Who are you?
When I share,
how dare you?
As you know, I create a lot of handling videos. If I'm drawing blood on a cat or dog, I share it from an educational standpoint. I describe and narrate everything I'm doing. And I always say this when I lecture, and I'm like, so when I'm doing because I do a lot of fear-free, minimal restraint, cooperative care. And when I do a fear-free restraint on a dog, let's say I'm drawing blood and I may have one hand on the animal and I'm doing it by myself. I don't recommend that for everyone. That's for very skilled handlers, but all the comments are like, yay, awesome. And the same thing with the cat, and the body language is happy and relaxed in the cat and the dog. Literally, Ellen, I can't begin to tell. There's always at least 2 to 4 comments saying that cat's just going to bite your face. And I'm like, cats don't just bite your face, you guys.
Yeah, I know. And I was like, watch it. Watch this. Hold my beer and watch this.
Drop my mic.
Prove you wrong. I'm going to prove you wrong because that you have, and they're only projecting their own, you know, fears.
Yeah. And everything. I think a lot of that is because from like an empathy standpoint, I think I know what I was taught in tech school. I can't even imagine what you were taught in tech school before me.
Yeah, it was sad.
I'm just being honest. Like that was because I graduated like 12, 13 years ago and I don't use any of the handling techniques I was taught for cats or dogs. So what we're taught, like scruffing and using force, causes cats, understandably, appropriately, to escalate. So most people's experiences with cats are they tend to escalate and bite or scratch them, but it's due to us missing, not maliciously. So I understand where some of that fear comes from. And like you said, I think that they're just kind of saying, it's just interesting though, because it happens every, like I could post 5 dog videos, 5 cat videos, general public, vet med, shelter med, and vet and shelter med are always like, but, or they'll say, but that won't work with blank. But with a dog, they, even though I explain everything and then every animal's an individual, every situation's an individual, we're going to handle those differently. But like you mentioned, that stigma and that negative, like stereotypic cat stuff, it is still very strong in the general public. But I think it's hard sometimes, real talk, like as a veterinary professional that's working to advocate for cat patients.
Yeah, for sure.
And seeing how our colleagues sometimes.
Yeah. And I have colleagues that come to me, to other technicians, like in tears.
Yeah.
Telling me about like the situations that happen at their clinics and stuff and how they're spoken to about. And it's like, these are your clients that are paying you guys very good money to take care of their pets. And here you are treating them like shit. No wonder why your clients do not trust you to take that cat to the back room. I wouldn't trust you.
Right.
I wouldn't trust you at all. And it's like one of those things that's like, you have got to start doing stuff in front of clients. I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable with a lot of stuff either. but I still do it. I still do it. And I explain it the whole step of the way on what's happening, why their cat might be a little bit vocal, why we're now putting food in front of this cat's face to try to reward it while we're working with it. And it's like, it's either you put the effort in to work with these animals or get out of my way, get out of my way.
I love because you.
There's somebody else that's going to, and your clinic, that's going to be that star with those cats.
We all move out of the way
and let them do their job, because clearly you don't want to. Obviously this is way too much effort for you to put into to dealing with this. God help me. If I walked into a clinic and I see people manhandling cats, and I have before, and I'm like going, oh my God. And I'm here to teach you guys about feline body language and handling and how to work with them a little bit better in a room. And I get, that's not how we do it. I'm like, well, if that's the attitude, you guys can write me out my check right now. And I'm going to walk out the door because you're still paying me no matter what. So I can stay here and teach you, and you can learn a couple of tips, maybe get some pearls of wisdom. Maybe I might change your mind. Maybe I might walk out the door and be like, she's full of shit. And you go back to your merry way of what you were doing.
But however, being open to learning is really crucial.
Yeah. And it's very difficult for some people who are set in their ways in clinical practice. Like, we have always done it this way. And if you're very task oriented, it can be a very hard break. And it's like when I work with stuff with the American Association of Feline Practitioners, and I always say this, it is the cat first. It is your team second. It's the safety of the cat, safety of the team, the task last. That is it. That is how you have to think the whole process through. How can we make this cat more comfortable? Well, we might have to do X, Y, Z. We might have to send you home with an ankylotic and come on back. I personally don't believe that there are many cats that I have seen that I've worked with that doing the, well, we need to give them a break in a room and come back 30 minutes later. Well, number one, no one really has a time for it because we have 30 more cats we have to see in the day. And then that poor cat is in there. Just the fear is escalating the entire time. Like, we have to do something about it. Sometimes leaving them in a situation is just as worse as removing them from a situation at times. So it really is very, very cat dependent. And if you're not going to be patient about that cat dependent, that you are going to lose. It's a losing battle. So no, you have got to meet in the middle with something that works for everybody, but the cat has to be put first.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Because I think when it comes to handling, obviously I make change because I'm assessing the animal's body language the whole time. I'm changing with the animal based on, I'm already aware of the procedures. There's a plan in place. I've communicated to the veterinarian or assistant or technician I'm working with. All of that's being done. And I may take a 5-second break.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, the whole 30 minute. Now, let's say the only time I could see where that could be beneficial, because of course, is it like, let's say the cat comes in over threshold. So really fearful, which is in the future, we're going to talk to that client to either work with a behavior consultant like myself or talk to that client about carrier training, low stress travel, lots of simple things clients can realistically do. Mm-hmm. You could put a 2-minute video on your homepage.
Yep.
You could have your CSR, have the talking points. These are very realistic things. And that cat will, first off, that cat will come in. So you won't lose money.
Yep.
That human animal bond won't be broken because the poor client, that client won't associate you with stress because they got their cat. Mm-hmm. But also that cat's going to come in with less stress overall.
Yes.
But in the cases where, let's say, there's a need and not a want. So like a nail trim, guys, that's a want, right? And there are very few cases where there are needs. I understand that there are geriatric patients with very long nails because everyone's like, what about that one thing? I'm saying as a whole, as a generalization, but if the cat is not feeling well and we want to do like vomiting, diarrhea for a few days, that's a need. You want to do diagnostics on arrival. If that cat is really fearful, maybe we're going to place them in a cat specific cat ward with calming music in a nice box with minimizing
some pheromones.
Yeah. And then maybe give them a gabapentin or some other medication. Yeah. That's a little different, but I hear what Helen's saying. Cause sometimes I think people, it's not as simple as now that is, those are some simple steps.
Yeah.
You're going to get your diagnostics way quicker. Everyone's safer. The cat's happier. It's a win-win. But the whole, hey, let's just let them sit in this room.
Yeah. And you should have, minutes. You have that, you should have that time allotted. Like you should have like cat appointments should be like 40 minutes to an hour. I'm sorry. You come in, you open up that kennel door, you let the cat acclimate on its own. Nobody goes in there for the first few minutes. You might have somebody go in there, quietly talk to the owner about their concerns, blah, blah, blah. Come back in, work with the cat at you know, hip height, not on the floor at hip height when you were actually removing a cat from a cat carrier, only because you have better control of the situation. If that cat decides to, I don't know. I mean, you've seen it too. Then the cat that runs around the room and it goes across the ceiling and everything else, because it's gone from, this is not bad. And it escalates immediately to, like, you know, the level five. And you're like, well, I don't know what just happened. And I did not see anything coming in that 1/60th of a second, which, you know, cats can change so quickly. But you can allow them to acclimate, get the information you need, formulate that plan with the team, and then get the right people to actually go work with that cat in a very quiet situation. And it's the same thing as well, is like, so many people go in, you have technicians that want to go and do that TPR, and they go and they shake hands with that cat with the thermometer. And all of a sudden the cat's like, you know, we're done here. And they're like, this, well, I don't know what
introduction
happened.
I'm not feeling this.
I don't know what happened. And it's like, well, you just stuck something cold and awful up its butt because you're adamant about getting a temperature on a healthy cat that's coming in for vaccines. However, I do know they can have an elevated temperature upon presentation, maybe because of stress, probably not due to an underlying disease, unless, you know, you go walking in the room, you're like, you're not here for vaccines. There's something wrong with you, you know? And then you have to convince the owner that you're like, no vaccines today. We got to think about something different. You really just have to change your mindset on the way that you actually just work with them. Like, you might have to do everything backwards. You might have to take that blood pressure first. Thinking just has to be, you know, it might be backwards thinking. Like, you might have to go into the room, let the cat acclimate first, and then you get your blood pressure first, because we want it to be at the most calmest point that the cat's being worked with. And then maybe do the exam, and then maybe do the lab work. Now, it might be a little odd now that if the cat's going from one set of people to another person to another person. However, if you have the same people with the hands still on the cat's going to be like, okay, I know you, and everything that's going to be going on, I'm familiar with this. And you just have to, like, really just individualize everything. Not everybody's going to fall into the same pattern of working with them. And I think that's what clinics want. They want a pattern. And it's like, I'm sorry, I don't have that for you. Everything is very, very individualized when it comes to a cat. There could be times I walk into a room, I'm like, this is going to be the best. I love this cat. It's going to be an amazing appointment. Or I can go and walk in a room and be like, okay, we need a chat first before we even remotely go in there on how we're going to handle the situation.
Having a handling plan is so important. And it might be, again, I do handling plans very quick in my head now. Now, when I first started, because I talk about this a lot, I think handling is a skill. And I don't think the animal welfare world, vet med, shelter med, technically consider it a skill. Unfortunately, I am hoping that we are leaning forward to that, but I don't think that we consider handling a skill set. It's more, like you said, one restraint for the dog, one restraint for the cat, and those restraints happen to escalate fear and stress. And then if animal moves, we hold harder, which is what I was taught. And that's just setting not only that animal up to fail but have a horrible experience and escalate and then have no choice but to exhibit aggressive behaviors due to fear. But also it sets us veterinary professionals up to fail. And I think I love handling because I get that I love behavior, but it's a critical skill. Like I have to critically think, and how am I going to give them the treat on a licky mat versus a tongue depressor versus an ice cream cone, or I'm going to use this toy because I'm assessing this cat's body language. And once you do it for long enough, literally, I know it looks really easy when we're doing it, but we're doing a lot in our brains.
We are. And then you have a lot of clinics that look at what you're doing, like to try to do better creature comforts. And it's like, I want to put that effort into it. It's taking up too much time. And it's like, well, then you've already chosen to fail.
Right.
You've made your choice and you either can do things better. It's like what you said, like, don't give it to one a tongue depressor. Tongue depressors are gross. They smell like hospital. You know, every cat that comes in, if we give them a churu, which I love, I think they're delightful. They get their own. Like, no one shares a churu. You get your own, like, one whole entire packet of it. You deserved it. Same with, like, other treats and stuff. We do not give them hospital treats. They would get treats that they would get at home. They would get Greenies. They would get Temptations.
Good stuff.
Friskies, like something smelly, that they are familiar stuff with.
Yeah.
Right. Versus, like, here's some TD because we can just pay for the bag here at the clinic. Ew, who wants to eat TD at the clinic? Nobody. Give me something good.
I always joke that when I'm talking about, like, creating a list of positive distractions for whatever animal and how that could be brushing, petting, food, toys.
Yeah.
When it comes to cats, I was like, guys, I know you have that like packet of food that you got from your rep for free a year ago. Mm-hmm. Y'all, that is not a high value. That's not even a medium value distraction. No. We talking tuna, churro, whipped cream, vegan it's marshmallows. Like
cats are not frugal creatures. I'm sorry. Start spending the money. You see the little dollar bills with the little wings on them go flying away is when you own a cat. And it's well worth it because you can create such an amazing relationship with these cats that come in, and these cats recognize you, and then the clients recognize you and want you. And they said, this person who came in here, my cat has never been this comfortable before.
You look magic. And you're like,
person
I'm
again.
Not magic. I just,
you know, like this is every day. I bowed to the cat and I was like, okay, I'm going to work with you. Like you tell me what I'm allowed to do. And I'm going to get permission from you first to work with you, is the way that you really kind of have to look at it. And then you're like, okay, well, I'm sorry. We still have to get that senior panel on you. So you gotta help me out, kitty, but I'm going to make it worth your while. But yeah, I mean, you just really have to change your mindset. And I hate using that word a lot. Like I'm going to change your mindset. It's very difficult to change habit. Routine.
And I think in especially in mindset with cats, there, I think some of those, because like any change, even positive change, is hard to do, and we recognize that. But I think there's so many negative stereotypes and ideas ingrained into the animal world. I think it's because I work with dogs too, and I think it is a little more difficult with people changing, because like you said, they're just a lot more ingrained. They're more habits and they don't feel comfortable with new things because even though what they've been doing has not been working, they feel comfortable with that technique. So we empathize with that, but I think it's all about learning more and really working with the cat as an individual. And like Ellen mentioned, like the relationships that you make with these cats and their caregivers, I'm a behavior consultant and clients meet me. And the first thing they ask me is, where do you work?
Yeah,
I want you to hold my cat. And I don't.
Yes.
And when I was working in GP, I was requested as a tech. They didn't care what vet they had. They wanted me as a tech because like Ellen does, like, first off, we're working with the animals as an individual, but I'm also describing to the client, communicating, which is a huge part, what I'm doing, which helps us look valuable because we are awesome and people should know it. But we're also helping them to identify body language. So let's say that cat's scared and that client doesn't understand that at home and then has her kid go up and hug cat. And it's a common, just not maliciousness, but then cat bites kid, then me or Ellen are called. And then kid has a lifelong traumatic response to cat. Like I'm getting really deep, but this happens all the time. So you assessing body language and sharing with it, with the client can be, it's life-saving. Yeah. And when we address their anxiety and reduce it, everything goes faster.
Right. And you have the newer cluster of cat owners, you know, the younger crowd that's coming in.
The cluster.
they have a different outlook and expectations of their pets and the veterinary team. Now, sometimes that expectation is like, well, that's a lot of expectation that you're asking for. However, this is what is absolutely possible. And I'm willing to work with you on making this the best experience for everybody. And then you also see the same ones on TikTok and Facebook and the Instagram reels doing the dumbest shit with their cats. And it's like, why are you doing that? It's like, the thing when they pick up the cat now, like the wobble one here, and people in veterinary medicine are doing it too. You pick up the cat and you see if it lengthens out and if you can wobble them back and forth, that means
this is why I am not on TikTok, because I am aware of my triggers.
And the thing is, like, going, why am I watching this at 1:30 in the morning, getting angry over it? And I'm like, going, are we that stupid? And you're in veterinary medicine. Are you that stupid to put something up like that? And there's hundreds of them doing it. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like the lack of respect for something like that. And I know it's supposed to be cute and kitschy and all that kind of stuff, but you could see it in the cat's face that they're like, not really jiving right now. Like, this is not cool. I would rather see you train a cat to high five or jump through a hoop or get on that chair and like sit up for something and actually like work with them that they're actually, you know, being rewarded for not, I don't want to say performing. Performing is a bad word.
They're being reinforced for behavior you want to see
right.
again.
You're being reinforced for behavior you want to see again. And it's like with Noggin, my Abyssinian, the cat's brilliant. We taught him how to fetch. And now not only does he fetch, if someone's not playing with him, he will go and seek out somebody else to go play fetch with him. And if he wants something, he has a cue. He has to put his paw out and tap you a couple of times and be like, hello, like, I need your attention here. I would like that. And it's like, he just did his cue. You have something that he would like to share with. You need to share with him. You have to, whether or not it's something you don't want to hit the share with, you have to give him a little piece of it or be like, you know what? Hang on a second. Let me go grab you something that's more appropriate for you to
and
have.
You guys have helped to build that up.
Right.
And you it's can, a beautiful
amazing relationship.
Yeah. The stuff so I know I should talk about people that want me to talk about it all the time. Ellen brought it up. So, the way that cats are interpreted on social media, it's a little hard for me. And I try to spread education and empathy. Mm-hmm. But I mean, real talk, I'm not going to lie to you. Does it hurt my heart? And do I go over threshold in my house sometimes when friends or clients send me a video and they mean well, they're concerned and they want to share it with me because one, they know that I'm really good at wording things in a kind, empathetic, professional mm-hmm. way to help educate that person. Two, they also know I might have a resource about it because I've seen it so much, but I don't think they realize how much mental exhaustion it is for me to see. It's the same thing with dogs. It's just like, I think at Christmas, there was something again, I'm not on TikTok. I know I should start one, but you guys, mental health, I already have a lot of things. It was because I made a resource about cats and Christmas trees, because again, it's a common thing I see. So I want to help provide things that they can do realistically that prevent the cats from being in the Christmas tree. And some of it is as simple as giving them alternative behaviors, like place boxes around the Christmas tree, give them plants that they can chew because cats like to chew too. Yep. And redirect some things that are very basic that people realistically can do. And like I had five or six friends and colleagues and clients send me TikToks. I guess there was a thing where they're like, you just chase your cat around the Christmas tree and like yell. So essentially applying, it's positive punishment, applying from a science, like applying something that causes fear, pain, discomfort.
And they're still going to do it. They're still going to do it. They're curious animals. And the more you yell at them or give them like a really bad reaction to it. I mean, sometimes those animals, like they pull away to the point that relationship you used to have with them is no longer there.
Oh no. Because now that cat is, first off, if positive punishment, I do not use those techniques, but if it works, we should only do 1 to 2 trials and that behavior should decrease. If not, this is just operant conditioning science. But like you said, most people again, like they saw it on TikTok and they were sharing it. And now I'm like, okay, so I could share these easy things that will strengthen your bond, not cause your cat fear. Now your cat's going to be afraid of you.
Yeah.
They're
now you're talking about that. You're talking about that fear response. And this, I'm going to trigger you just for a moment.
Oh, so she gave me a heads up, you guys.
I'm going to give you a heads up. And this, it literally hurt my heart because you're talking about this operant conditioning. The people that put on a mask that look like a cat face, and then they get on all fours and they come around a couch corner or something and they scare their cat and their cat's like Halloweening at them and the ears are back and they're doing the
severe fear. Yeah.
The heavy vocalization of like, I'm going to beat your ass in 2 seconds. What's going to happen when that cat attacks the living shit out of that person? Right. Oh, by the way, everybody, I swear like a sailor, just fun fact. And this cat literally like goes after them and will put somebody in a hospital because now you have bitten and been scratched to the point that, you know, you might have some major damage to yourself all because you thought it was funny to scare your animal. It's not funny. They're not on the same intelligent level that we are at. They are not a type of a primate. They are a cat. It is a different mammal. They work very differently. Why would you do this? And it just shows the lack of maturity that these people have, that they do this to animals. It's incredibly sad. And it's like, man, TikTok is like the video version of shitter. you know.
I can't, I know. And I think us as cat advocates and behavior and veterinary professionals, there's a few ways to handle things like that. Like, to be fair, so I do make a lot of resources based on what I see. So literally, because like it happens so much that I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just make a resource, whether it's an infographic that's, and I'm going to just post it here. So it's easy. It's not emotionally draining, but I'm also planting a seed. Or you can actually have a conversation, because a lot of people who've shared cat and dog videos, like my friends on social media, for example, who aren't in our animal welfare world, I'll explain, oh, it's a, like this cat or dog, this is what body language they're exhibiting. That means they're feeling this. I know you most likely didn't realize, because I know that these people love their animals. So I'm like, I know you most likely didn't realize that this was causing, you know, this, but this is what, and a lot of people honestly have been like, thank you for telling me. And then they have removed it, you know, but also for your own mental health, it's also okay to just not engage too.
Yeah.
Cause I used to
scroll on by,
cause I used to be like, I'm sure you were too, like 7 years ago, I would
and make a comment
and to be fair, some of my comments probably weren't, again, now that I know more about behavior, I wasn't like F off, like I wasn't saying that, but I'm sure they weren't as effective communication as I can do now.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been times that you write it up and you're like, oh, I got to give this 20 minutes. I got to come back to this before I hit that enter button.
That's where social media is rough, because I think about before I post, but I mean, you know, 15 years ago, I might have not done that as much.
Yeah, so for sure.
So sometimes for me, like for TikTok, I'm just ignoring it, because the only thing, I know there's good stuff on there, guys, but all I ever get is from my, and again, friends who mean well, sending me the most horror. And like you said, I think it's hard because people, I always joke like, hey, you cat lovers, I love you guys, but you guys are the ones using the language that we really need to stop. You guys are the ones putting out these memes that cats are stubborn, which they're not, or cats can't be trained, which is not true. Yeah. Or
man, you hit the nail on the head. Yes.
All these dangerous things. Yeah. And then there's these like cat influencers, and that's a whole nother thing. And these other, and I'm like, I understand that you're not going to put as much into a post as I do as a educated. I get that. We're different. I totally understand that. But also, be open to learning and be aware what you're putting out.
Yes.
I was just talking to Ellen about this. I think we've both seen it. I see cats and dogs die because of language that is used, because of memes that are shared.
Yep. And those poor, those are the same cats that get 24 hours in a shelter situation. Yep. Demographically dependent. Not all you do this, but these cats might have a 24-hour window before they get a make or break. You're going to be euthanized because you hissed or you swatted at somebody because you're in a defensive manner, because you're scared and you're in a cage. You don't know what's happening. And now you're like, well, you're marked.
And the word feral gets thrown around a lot. That's another label that I'm not saying cats cannot be feral, but fractious and feral, two labels I'm very sensitive to, because like, and again, the humans suffer too.
Yeah.
And that's really what got me into, honestly, that was kind of, I always loved cats, but that's really got me, what got me into like cats, where I'm like, whoa, are they misunderstood? And this isn't just the general public. This is like animal welfare in general. Yeah. And it was really eye-opening when I went to find resources and I couldn't find any, and I have more accessibility to those than others. And I was like, and then I was like, some of this is starting to make, it's still upsetting and we're going to work to change it. But I was like, I'm starting to understand. And then I started learning about handling and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, we were taught a restraint that escalates stress and fear. And all of it started to make sense. But this is why it's so important to be open and learn, and why I love Ellen so much. I mean, she's great as a person too, but she is doing so much for cats and has, I looked up to her before I met her.
Oh, that's so nice.
Oh, I probably totally nerded out. Cause I like to reinforce people. So if I if I meet someone and I like a study that they did or a lecture that they did, I'm going to tell them like, that was sick. Thank you. Like, I appreciate that lecture or whatever.
You're like, I did not know that. Like, even if you got something from one little tidbit from a lecture, a lot of times I'm like, that was so worth it. Or I'm like, we need to incorporate that into what we're currently doing. I think we can do this. I think it makes everybody evolve into be much better people, you know, when you do it that way.
100%.
And And I think, you know, tracking back to what you're saying about like the, you know, the animals that wind up being euthanized simply because of behavior problems and stuff, and how there's kind of like a lack of like better resources out there. I think one thing that we in veterinary medicine don't spend enough time on is the emotional toll it takes on the people that are relinquishing the animals or the 100. Problem that it's happening to. We're just like, oh, well, it's biting the kid at home and blah, blah, blah. And we could be like, okay, in the 15 minutes, this is what's been going on, yada, yada, yada. And yeah, they only get 15 minutes, but that's not enough time to really figure out like what the cause is. And how invested are you as a practitioner or a technician into like really helping out this specific case? And I think that's where technicians can absolutely shine, because 100%. We love communicating back and forth.
I was that tech at every clinic I worked at, which is, and now I'm a full-time behavior consultant because, and if you don't have time, because I know the AFP, and again, we all know behavior is medicine. I scream it from this podcast like every day. And a subtle change in behavior can mean a very big thing, not just for dogs, but for cats, especially because they're more misunderstood, unfortunately. And there are certain questions we can ask clients easily as part of our, like we do the whole EDV, you know, seat, I'm like coughing, eating, drinking, all that cliche stuff, which is important. I'm not saying it isn't, but we need to really have a this isn't like a yes, no, right? This is more of a open-ended questions. Let's have a conversation. Let's actively listen. And then let's say you aren't comfortable with cat behavior, because many people aren't, respect to that as well. Yep. There are people like Ellen and me and other resources like ISFM and some other really great resources, that Fear Free Happy Homes, that you could send clients to get that additional help. But just saying, okay, and writing it down, I agree with Ellen. That
is better.
Yeah, we could do better. And I think I definitely, half of my job as a behavior consultant, even because I work with fearful animals, especially cats who've been fired from veterinary clinics or have had severe traumatic and have not been to a vet in years.
Yeah.
And half of my job is coaching and supporting that client, because we all know it, guys. We're fucking messes when our animals are, my cat can like cough once or have a hairball, which can be a normal thing occasionally, a hairball. But I, with my veterinarian mind, we think worst case scenario and we become a mess. And I try to use that energy and be like, oh my gosh, what this client is going through, or they can't get their cat to the vet if their cat does get sick. Like, oh my God, like the amount of emotional trauma that, like you said, that client's going through, or they feel like they have, I meet so many people who are like, I always joke I should be called at wins end training, but they feel like they have no choice, but they love their cats, but the euthanizer relinquished their cat. Yeah. And I'm the first person that listened to them. Mm-hmm. And again, they're not bad people. They're over threshold. They're tired.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. Yeah. Behavior issues in cats and dogs are hard. And most, you have to realize, if they're looking on social media or even their friends, and sometimes the animal professionals in their vicinity, they don't offer support. They just say, just throw the cat outside, they'll stop peeing, or your cat's just a dick. Or so the people they go to for help are actually, it's like me being really upset and Ellen being like, suck it the fuck up.
Yeah. It can be very discouraging when you go and try to get help and no one's asking you. And I always say this to everybody, when you're working with a cat and you're working with specific cases, and you can put it into basically every case.
Right.
However, you know, very specifically like pediatrics and all this other kind of stuff, you'd be like, what are you willing to spend? Okay. So price is a factor. How far are we willing to go as far as like diagnostics, et cetera? What can you physically do at home? Like, what are your limitations? Like, what are you willing to step out of bounds with, or get out of your comfort level with? What can you do at home so we can make things better? And be honest with me. Don't let me give you like some information to go home with and you failed because you decided not to do any of the physical aspect at home. And then how do you emotionally feel about this? Like, how emotionally invested are you into making sure that this animal thrives in your home? Because this is a very long relationship. It can be a relationship from weeks, depending upon if you're a foster or if you are one of those hospice homes that you adopt anybody that just needs a comfortable place to pass in. And, you know, kudos to those who are a hospice family. You guys are amazing. To the cats that live into their 20s. Like, this is a very deep, intense, intimate relationship. How invested are you going to be? And then once you get them to open up about that, you're like, okay, now I can get you a better plan of action that we can work together, and we'll modify it as time of goes course. On. But I think this will work if you are just a little bit more honest with me than just like, hey, how's this cat doing in a room? It's like, you have right. to have like that heart to heart talk. It's like, okay, what can we do here? And then once they tell you and like literally tell you their whole life story about their cat, you're like, okay, hold on. I know what we can do. I'll be back. I'm going to email you. It's going to be a long email, but we're going to do this together.
You're being, because it's kind of like, for example, like as I got more into behavior, if a client just finds out a severe diagnosis in their animal, yeah. right? I know now that, you know, 20 years ago, we would have just said it. We would have talked them through it. But now I know they were probably over threshold and mm-hmm. probably got very like 20 years ago, I might've said that client wasn't compliant. Now I'm like, that client was in shock. They were grieving. Yeah. They were struggling. That's a really big, we need to follow up and go over it again mm-hmm. and talk to them in a way. Cause again, you're going to ask this client in a different way that you're going to ask this client based on their body language and the personality. And cause we get a vibe, yeah. like that's a big part yeah. of our job is communication, which I love, but I know I haven't always loved.
I know. And everybody, and like, there's so many people in this field that are like, I don't like people. I do it for the animals.
It's I was like this isn't for you then, love.
Know, like, you know, that animal is attached to that person's hip. Like, maybe you should figure out a different career path then. And this is why maybe you're not thriving in this career is because that's your mentality. You're going to have to like people because that's how you have to communicate for the animal is through that person, you know,
and be genuine and not,
yeah.
I mean, that's a big, I think, cause I always tell people like I've worked at really busy vet clinics where we weren't ERs, yeah. but I literally had to go in the room and say CPR, DNR, we yeah. need it like right now. Cause we're doing, you know, this on your animal. And I didn't say it like that, obviously. Yeah. You work with that, but if you don't like we have to have really serious yeah. in-depth conversations and be kind and genuine and listen mm-hmm. and not judge. Yeah. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I judge, I have bias. We all have bias. I'm working on mm-hmm. being aware of that bias and trying to decrease it to the best of my ability. But again, like communication is such a big part of our jobs. And you kind of mentioned, cause I know we're kind of going, I could talk to Ellen forever, but one of your other specialties is pediatric, which
yep.
working with the little neonate babies, mm-hmm. Especially with kittens, which is how I first found out about you because I was looking for resources because that's behavior is rough, but whoa, is neonate care rough for resources, not just for vet med. Yeah. Because I'll be honest, I don't think vet med is seeing a lot of neonates and we nope. both work in shelters. So yep. shelters see a lot of those neonates, but then they're doing the best with what they're given, but there's so mm-hmm. few resources for them to get better. Can you tell me a little bit about how you went on that path of neonates? And she has criticalkittens.org. It is a wonderful website and I'm trying to convince her to write a book. So.
one day.
We talked about it. I'm planting a seed for everybody because we need one from her about neonates 100%.
Yeah. So it is that niche that, you know, in tech school and vet school, you really only get maybe that one or two lectures on reproduction and pediatrics. And then it's like, suddenly this animal has become 6 weeks of age, and this is when you shall see it into the clinic. Right. Being in Arlington, Virginia, where I am, I'm surrounded by animal shelters and rescue groups, and they're all like really, really amazing people because they want to make things work. And being one of the only cat hospitals in the Arlington area at that time, there are a few in our area. We would work very closely with the animal shelter. And I had Marnie Rust, who started all the little kitten colleges that are across the United States now. Marnie and I are very good friends. And they used to bring me these kittens. And she would be like, well, we really don't have the resources for it, or I don't have, you know, a foster that could handle something of this capacity. Could you help? And so this is years and years ago, my God. And so I would start taking care of these kittens, spending my own money. As any of you know, as a technician, we really don't have a lot of money. So, you know, wind up, you know, adopting them out either through the animal shelter or through the clinic. We would adopt them out that way to clients. You know, they would love them that way. But it was just seeing these fosters and these rescue groups and these shelter people come in with these little tiny babies and they're being turned away from an ER because they are told, and I'm sorry, guys, it is true, or else they wouldn't really truly be saying it this many times to me in the same area. We do not see neonates or pediatrics below 6 weeks. Our doctor refuses to see them, or, you know, there's nothing we can do for them.
Right.
There's lots you can do for them if you are willing to step out of your comfort zone and actually work with them. And we know these little guys are very susceptible to bacterial infections, viral infections. They got congenital defects up the wazoo sometimes. You're like, how did you come out alive? Right. You have so many congenital defects here. This is curious. I hope you do survive, because then you'll be that once in a million unicorn that proved everybody wrong. And then you have, you know, a lot of the injuries that happen to these babies. I can't tell you how many kittens out there are paralyzed because they got stepped on by accident, or they have another spinal avulsion injury and they're told, well, they're going to be incontinent, they're going to die. No, 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 that's not true. They may have some sort of incontinence, or they might actually be rather continent, and you just have to stimulate them like a kitten to go to the bathroom again. So it just shows you that there's this lack of a comfort level for them to be truly, you know, confident in saying, I can go ahead and walk you through and help treat this case that we're seeing here. And I got tired of seeing it. So Marcus and I decided, you know, after Chris passed away, one of my assistants who I had for 10 years, and he was my best friend at work, you know, he killed himself. And, you know, we decided to name the foundation after him because he wanted to be a social worker. And what better social work could we come up with than what we were doing with cats? And so we decided to make it our mission with the foundation that we were going to provide education and medical care to these kittens that everybody else kind of saw as a throwaway medical problem that, you know, we're not going to help. You should be euthanized. And so our goal was to raise awareness by lowering euthanasia with these kittens. And to date, we have done over 600 kittens alone with the foundation. And it's usually just me and maybe like a couple staff members that foster. I do have my power foster, Kim, out there, who I think she's just amazing. She was a human nurse, and now she has Egbert. She has
Smokey,
and now she has Squash. Like, we call her the Dangle Gang. Her favorites are the paralyzed cats that wear the diapers. And, you know, you could see where a lot of people in veterinary medicine give up. They're like, oh my God, a cat in diapers or a dog in diapers. Let me think of the worst case scenarios. They're going to have diaper rash. They're going to have this, all these chronic infections and everything. You might as well just euthanize them because they're going to have all these problems. And meanwhile, you're looking down at this happy animal who can still play, who is still cognitively there, who is being cared for by somebody who's willing to put the time and effort into them. Why are we just jumping to euthanasia instead of saying, this is what we have, how much are you willing to
having that, that communication that we need
how
to
much
have.
physical ability are you going to put into this, and how emotionally invested are you? When are we going to say stop? And then once you start thinking that way, especially with pediatrics, things get a lot better. And it's just like everybody with like pediatrics and Clavamox kind of go hand in hand, and I want to smack a hand every time I see Clavamox.
I'm triggered by Clavamox as well in shelter med. Don't get me started.
Yes. This baby has severe diarrhea and you're going to put it on Clavamox. What is Clavamox going to do? Most likely give it even worse diarrhea.
Yeah.
There's other things we can do. Well, the boxes on these other drugs say differently. All right. Well, let me just be honest with you that there's no drug company in their right mind that's going to be like, you know what? I think we need to raise some cats and get ourselves some neonates and then test our drugs on it.
And there are very few, unfortunately, which is another problem, but we're getting better, guys, but there are very few FDA approved cats. Come on, guys.
Very few.
We're using most of them off label. Now, I'm not saying, hey, random person. I mean, as a veterinary. And it's interesting because when I met you, I worked with a lot of shelters throughout my career. Yeah. And when I met you, I was like thinking, and I was like, shit, she's right. I've been working in GPs and shelters and in GP over 10 years. And I never saw a kitten under 5 weeks of age. Like I was like, in my experience, I'm unaware of the resources I've seen.
You typically see somebody be like, oh, look, the kitten is so tiny and cute. And they take a picture with it and they're like, okay, here you go. I don't know what to do with it. It sounds good.
Yeah.
It's like, we can do better. And then I started with my kittens that any of them that passed away, I would send them out for necropsy.
To learn more.
Because I wanted to know what these babies were dying from. And the majority of the time they were coming back with some sort of bacterial septic infection. Mm. So we know these babies because, you know, they wind up getting omphalitis.
Yeah.
A lot of these kittens that are found in dirt, or they have like the placenta parachute still stuck to them, or they have umbilical cords that are 6 inches long because people are afraid to trim them back. They wind up with this wicking infection, and this kitten will be fine for days. And then all of a sudden it has that, you know, it's fading, which I hate that term too.
I'm going to have Ellen back to talk all about fading kitten syndrome term. Because it is not a thing. And I unfortunately I do too. It's a common, and I see larger orgs saying that it's a thing, mm-hmm. which is really concerning because that's a whole episode in itself, girl. So I'm having you back.
You die of something, man. I wish I could die and just fade into the sunset. These kittens are not fading into the sunset. They're dying of some sort of either bacterial, viral, congenital, whatever issue that they have. It's just that we don't have the resources.
And we could say we don't know. But you can say you don't know, and it can be blank, 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 but you just creating this word that a lot of people take as like a diagnosis is very concerning.
Yeah. And a lot of the machines and stuff we use in practice is not small enough to accommodate these little guys. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times on my feline forums that I have on Facebook for the veterinary technicians for pediatrics and feline only, that I'm like going, okay, well, you might not be able to intubate this baby. However, if we can get a 26 gauge IV catheter in them or an IO catheter in them, I'll show you how to do a CRI under anesthesia for these little guys. Even for major procedures such as an amputation, it can be done. You have to be willing to step out of your comfort zone and do it and know that, yeah, it's a risk, but the other risk is that this animal is going to die.
And I think so if we're just saying fading like that, ugh. Or we're just saying euthanasia. Mm-hmm. Also, what we're not doing is how are we going to learn?
Nope, you're not
about all these other types. We're not going to learn. And one day these will just be common knowledge, and that's how things happen. So I saw you do a neonate lecture, and I was so impressed. I mean, I was already impressed with you, but I was like. And I think I went up to you and I'm like, why the fuck aren't you giving this everywhere? I think that was like the first thing I said.
Because nobody wants to learn about neonates.
And then I was like, this is so important. You need to be everywhere because I go to a lot of education and I have a lot of accessibility to educational resources, and very few resources are being, and I'm like, I want to learn more about this because I'm not as comfortable, especially, you know, that's not something I don't work with them as often. So I want someone like you to tell me, but that I didn't know that's how you got, that makes sense. I was like, I should ask her how she got into neonates and being the go-to neonate tech.
I got tired of seeing them being euthanized or being told that nothing could be done. I got tired of it. I'm like, why are we failing our future patients? Yeah. Why are we failing them? We can do something. And it was like, well, you get the same thing. Well, you have to do everything under a vet. And it's like, I know, I'm just a technician. However, I'm going to school you in what I do know. And I'm going to prove to you that you're wrong. And I'm going to make every one of these complicated animals survive out of spite. And like I said,
she's like, this is my motivation. I've identified it.
That is it. That is it. And I've had some like really, really complicated cases like come through. I've had a cat that has had lysosomal storage disorder. And I have everybody on the FIP warrior page going, it's FIP, FIP. And I'm like, oh, this is not really looking like FIP.
Yeah.
Took her to a couple neurology places. They're like, oh, I'm not sure. Took her out to Red Bank to see Dr. Glass. And he goes, I think you're onto something. And sure enough, you know, I went ahead and I had some advanced tests done. Again, not everybody's going to put that kind of funding into it. And I'm very lucky with my 501c3 and with the general public wanting to learn about this stuff that I'm willing to have the funding to do this. So thank you for all the support. If you support criticalkittens.org, I cannot thank you enough. You are moving mountains.
Yes,
moving mountains. And sure enough, this cat had lysosomal storage disease. And I even sent her out for necropsy after we decided, you know what, enough is enough. It's time. Your quality of life is no longer present. And Cornell was like, this is an amazing necropsy. And I was like, I knew it. Just because it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it might actually be like, you know, a chicken with a duck bill on.
And instead, I think
you really have to sleuth through it.
Medicine is all about. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to advocate for these cases, because if it was just somebody else, they might've been like, okay, yeah, it's FIP, and gone through the whole treatment and the cat's not cured. It was still getting worse because it was something completely different.
And that it's treatment all about is how not, you look
at it and advocate. Yeah.
Is a lot. So if yeah, we're gonna, oh my God, you know, so that's a whole nother lecture too. I just worked with a client for cooperative care, and he
$5,000 to $10,000.
He finished his injections. Yeah. He's doing great. He has no trauma. He still loves the vet. He still loves his mom. It's a beautiful thing. It taught me a lot. Yeah. I love shout out to Barnabas. He's probably not listening. That's a great name. I know, but shout out to his mom. She's a tech, and we just happened to meet at a conference, and she's like, I have to do this. And this is stressful.
Yeah.
But yeah, like doing, I feel like sometimes that can happen with all animals, but especially with neonates, where like the feeding, cause I realized that wasn't a thing, but like where we're just saying it's A or B, this is medicine. Yeah. It's A or B. And then we're like, essentially, like you said, we're failing that caregiver, we're failing that shelter who's going to believe that and then do that with every cat. We're failing that cat.
Right. And then you have a lot of shelters and a lot of, you know, big programs and stuff out there that you go to their websites and you're like, well, this doesn't sit right with me. They had to scroll on by. But those are some of the places that a lot of people are getting information.
That's where, I feel the same way about behavior.
You're just like, wait a second. Like we could be doing better. We could be doing better. Yeah. And sometimes they refuse to work with you because they want to do better. They want to be stuck in their own little world, and they don't want to evolve, and they don't want to have somebody who actually knows what they're doing to be like, you know, hey, we need to tweak some things here and there, you know, and it is what it is. You can only sometimes, if you have to work more in the, you know, the smaller niches in your area and demographically make changes there versus very wide at first, so be it. You are making a difference to those community cats at that point in time, even if it's on the small level. One day it will get bigger and the word will eventually spread. You know, I lecture for the Kitten College a couple of times a year. Can't tell you how many times that I've gone in, and after I'm done with my lecture, you know, I have some people to be like, well, I learned this from so-and-so and so-and-so. And you're like, okay, all right. Well, I have given you my wisdom, which is correct. And this is what has worked for us multiple times in the past, to the point that I'm blue in the face talking about it. Or you can just listen to this person too. That's completely up to you. I'm not the one failing the animal in the end.
Right.
You know, it's like Anne Werdinger once told me, she says, sometimes, they survive despite your intervention. And that stuck with me. And I was like, this woman is brilliant. She just gave me this amazing quote that I can use. She goes, yeah, sometimes those animals just survive despite your intervention. No matter how hard you try to kill them, they're still around. And I'm like, and she's so right.
Yeah.
She's so right when you look at it on that level. But I think we could do better for pediatrics. I think
100%.
I think the newer generation of veterinarians that are coming out of school want to do younger and younger because they see that there's a value, especially now that there are so many foster groups out there, or they foster. Look at UC Davis. They have a cat club. They raise kittens all year round there. And I think that's fantastic because those are the ones that are getting a different level of immersement in medicine that somebody else is not going to have the opportunity for.
And then if you can get that education and make that more accessible to all, which is the ultimate goal.
Yeah. And you have to get out of that mentality of spay, neuter. Everything has to be spay, neuter. Yeah, I get it. However, you're going to come across a breeder that's going to be doing either heritage breeding, or you can be like, oh God, it's you again. Why are we doing this? Can I please spay your cat or neuter your cat once and for all? Because you should not be doing this. Look at all the problems that are being, you know,
there's some genetic things that we probably shouldn't continue to.
And then, you know, you don't get that experience working with reproduction. Like you might wind up with a foster group that's like, no, I do not want to do a terminal spay. Okay. And you have to respect that as well. So, you know, you got to work with what you're given, and you have to kind of leave like your own personal like emotions behind sometimes. Like, you know, like I really hate this person right now because they won't do this, 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 or this.
Well, do the best you can with what you, like you said,
resources you have. Yeah.
And do what you can to keep that animal comfortable, and ideally that human comfortable as well. Yeah. That's a definition of being a tech, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, there might be a day that you can talk somebody into like, let's go ahead and now it's time to spay and neuter. Congratulations. Right. We're going to do this. This is the happiest day ever. Or you'd be like, well, you know, I've educated her to the best of my ability before. It sounds like you're interrogating them and harassing them. Right. You know, there's a difference for that. But usually like in the end, you know, you wind up winning because they finally start seeing, you know, the actualities of what's happening.
And you planted able to those seeds.
And right. Got to be nice about it.
That's with everything, like a dental or, you know, I, the doctor brings it up and then I bring it up, and it's not because the client doesn't care. It's just, they may not, I might word it different or, you know, all of these things, other things that are going on in their lives. But I am so happy to be able to talk to you today, and I will definitely have you back. I think we should do a whole episode on Faded Kitten Syndrome. Let me know, listeners, if you'd like that. But even if you don't, I'm probably going to do it. But anyways, because I think it's really important and we're both triggered by that. And Ellen is the person. She is the go-to to talk about that. But how I like to end the podcast is ask my guests something that makes them happy. This could be that your knee after surgery is in a cantaloupe size. This could be.
I am grateful for that.
She just had knee replacement surgery. She's a rock star doing podcasts. Or it could be, you know, the cuddle from your cat or a cup. I always say cup of coffee because I live for coffee. But what's something that makes you happy right now?
God, something that makes me happy right now. I will have to say that since I am recovering from my knee replacement surgery and I'm still out of work, I absolutely adore the company of my four cats. I'm on the couch and I am surrounded by cats all day long. And I just think it's a joy that they have picked me as the person that they are going to surround themselves around. Even though my husband says they're just waiting for me to get up to give them like a cookie or something like that. I just think it's wonderful because I feel like I've been accepted as part of them in like their little troop.
And they're probably like, Mom, you're home all the time. This is awesome. Yeah,
this is great. It's going to be so sad when I finally go back and I'm not going to be around them. But just being able to like get to know them on a different level, because I work all the time. And now that I get to be home with them, it's like, it's been a wonderful surgical vacation. Just put it that way.
I love it.
I really enjoy it. And I get, it's a different bonding experience for sure.
Well, thank you so much for coming here and sending love and healing vibes for your knee. Woo, woo, woo.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy talking to you. Every time I get a chance to grab you online or something, it's always just so nice to talk to somebody who, you know, thinks the same way you do, is very passionate about the same things.
Find your people.
It's refreshing. And thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. What an awesome conversation with Ellen all about cats. Let us know how you are advocating for cats in your shelter or veterinary clinic at Tales from a Vet Tech on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. You can also email us at talesfromanrvt@gmail.com. I would love to hear how all my amazing listeners, a-meowsing, are advocating for the cats that they work with. And just a friendly reminder, I am running in the Not One More Vet race around the world and would appreciate a donation. The link will be in the show notes. Thanks for listening, everyone.